I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is going to be episode number 261.
My name is John Anelio. I am a musician and wow, I messed up the script, Patrick.
Oh no, Lou Anders is going to be so upset.
Oh no. That's Patrick. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcaster. You can follow him on Twitter at ATFMB. I'm John Anelio. I'm a musician and a podcaster and a teacher. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio. And today we are joined by Andrew Liptak. He writes for lots of different genre websites and does all sorts of cool work and is an editor and has put out anthologies and all sorts of cool things. Writes for IO9 and SF Signal and has written for Tor, all the big places Andrew has done. And you can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Liptak. Andrew, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. For a little bit of trivia for people who are longtime listeners of the show, I put out a song quite a few years ago called A Stormtrooper for Halloween. And if you go to my website and try to download that song, there is a Stormtrooper on that cover. And that is actually Andrew Liptak in Stormtrooper armor on that. And I believe, Patrick, you actually did the artwork that kind of goes around that in terms
Correct.
Of the font and all that kind of good stuff. So
yep. I turned the image into a cover for your song.
Oh, you know what you did? Because then, yeah, because you made it into like a Halloween theme and there's like bats in the background and stuff. So that is, you know, so before we get into anything else, Andrew, maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the things you do with the 501st. Maybe you could just tell our listeners what the 501st is, who may not know that.
Sure. Before I do that, I've got even a better story about that picture. That is the troop where I got to meet Snoop Dogg in armor. The story behind that is that I belong to the 501st Legion, which is an international costuming group for all things bad guys of Star Wars. And we're Lucasfilm's preferred group to go to. So if they need stormtroopers for something and they can't do it themselves, they'll usually send out a casting call and pick up some of our guys. So this was a bunch of years ago. They needed some people for a product launch of some sort. I think it was shoes. And we get to walk around Times Square in armor. And then we were joined by Snoop Dogg. And that was that day.
And yeah, I'm just curious. Is the relationship still good with the Disney crew?
Yes. So Lucasfilm still exists. It is a company that is part of Disney. Our marching orders have been that everything is still the same. We still have a contact with Lucasfilm. The person we worked with for a long time has since left, but there's still some people that we work with pretty closely. They do ask us to do some certain things, like for the premiere of The Force Awakens, they asked us to leave our guns at home,
sure.
Mainly because, you know, bringing a gun to a movie theater is just not exactly a good idea.
I live in Aurora, so I understand.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, there's some slightly different things that we sort of have to abide by, and as we're using a major company's intellectual property,
sure.
We sort of have to play by their rules, but we're still around, and they know us, and they know that we do good work. So I'm hopeful that we'll be around for a lot longer.
Well, that's awesome. I just wanted to make sure because I know that you also do a lot of charity work.
Yep, we do. I've described it as the way that makes our self-indulgent costuming hobby a little bit less self-indulgent. So one of the things that I've done locally is we raised a couple of $100 for the Vermont Children's Hospital. We're actually forming a squad, which is a subunit of a garrison here in Vermont, which is pretty exciting, and hoping to do more of that in the near future.
Very cool.
I have so many more questions, but I said that my son has been watching the Lego Star Wars stuff. If you haven't seen it, it's very, very funny. And anytime they have the Emperor character in something that isn't the actual stuff, they always make the Emperor hilarious. And there's like a scene in one of the episodes where he's like, "Let's go to Wookiee World," and then Darth Vader's like, "It's called Kashyyyk," and then and then the Emperor's like, "Whoa, you're a real Star Wars nerd, aren't you?"
Robot Chicken did the same thing. Yes. Their emperor is pretty hilarious as well.
Well, I think there's one sketch, and I don't know if it always is, but I think Seth MacFarlane usually does the voice of the emperor on the Robot Chicken stuff. So, yeah, I was explaining it to my wife one time because I and we'll get into another story too with Andrew about what the 501st does, and I was like, oh yeah, they build their armor. That's not like they don't go to a store and buy it. They build it. Like, it is legit.
Yeah. Yeah, and that might be changing a little bit. There's a new company called Novos that is actually releasing armor. In theory, they're releasing armor. Recently, they sold a kit for the A New Hope Stormtrooper, and that's been – it was supposed to come out last fall, and they've been delaying shipments to their customers, which has got some of the people in the costume community a little bit upset. But that's a pretty much off-the-shelf costume that's pretty detailed, in theory. But for the most part, up until that stuff's released, everybody makes their own stuff out of kits, or they have somebody make it for them. And the stuff you'll find off the shelf right now for costumes really isn't that great. There's a kit made by Rubies, which is pretty expensive and not very accurate. And you'll see this in some of the videos. I want to see one of the comedy troupes that works around New York City. They did like the Princess Leia reading How to Overthrow the Empire in the subway. Those costumes are those knockoffs, and anytime any 501st member sees those, they sort of cringe a little bit, because it's like, we make stuff that's better than that and we can help you out with it. So but such is life.
Sure. How typically, like, how long do you spend making like a set of armor? Like, how long could that take? You're working on the weekends, you know. So.
If you're, it really depends. I actually just recently reconstructed my Stormtrooper and built a new one at the same time. I got that in July, and it's still not quite done. It's troopable, but it's not quite finished yet. I still have a couple of minor things to do on it. That took me a good couple months of just sort of steady work in the evenings. A lot of the trimming, gluing, cutting. Sometimes all you have to do is you have to put two pieces together and glue them, and then you have to wait for the glue to set. Mm-hmm. But it can take a couple of months. Up here in Vermont, we had a Vermont Comic Con where we picked up a bunch of recruits locally. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of them were like, you know, we really want to have a costume for the new film. How do we do this? So we ended up ordering, as a group, ordering, I want to say 6 suits of Stormtrooper armor, which all arrived at my house the same day. A lot of big boxes. And they did their suits in 6 weeks, and for them, I think 4 of them have completed their stuff. A couple more are still sort of in progress, but that's really fast. So that's about the, you know, that's working pretty much every evening, you know, getting a couple things done every night. It's pretty exciting.
I remember a couple years ago you were helping your girlfriend build armor.
My wife now.
Oh yeah. That's what I said at the time, your girlfriend.
Yeah, and that project, actually, we've never actually finished that. She's worn it a couple of times, and we just haven't gotten really around to doing much with it. But yeah, that's still around. And so a lot of this stuff is sort of, you know, weekend work, afternoon, evening work. So it depends on how much time you have.
Sure.
Cool. All right, well, lots to talk about with Andrew, but let's move on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Andrew, why don't you go first?
So I have a couple books that I'm planning on reviewing this spring that I'm pretty excited about. The first one is Will McIntosh's Burning Midnight. I'm a huge fan of Will McIntosh's works. He wrote a book called Soft Apocalypse, I want to say 2009. That was his debut. And it's probably one of my favorite books ever. It's a fantastic post-apocalyptic book. He's written a bunch since then, and I've always really liked his he's very accessible writer. He's also a guy who has a lot of really unique ideas. And there's been times when I've sort of picked up his books and think, you know, there's no way I'm going to like this, or this is just really out there. And it turns out that they're brilliant and fantastic. This one has to do with all across the world, these spheres are found. They just appear. And when you do something with them, they give you extra abilities. So if you take 2 of them of a certain color, they'll make you grow an extra inch, or they'll make you a little bit better looking, or they'll give you some singing ability. And this kid has discovered this really rare one. For your viewers, there's the cover.
Very cool.
And it's coming out in early February, and that one's going to be so far I started it last night, and I basically burned through the first 100 pages in not very long, so it's pretty exciting. It's also a YA novel. After that, I just finished V.E. Schwab's A Darker Shade of Magic, and then the sequel is coming out, A Gathering of Shadows. This was another one where I really got into it and just couldn't put it down. She's put together a really interesting series of parallel worlds, magic, some really interesting characters. And then finally, one of my favorite short story authors is Ken Liu. He's got a collection coming out called The Paper Menagerie, which collects all of his best work. And this is, I mean, I've read a lot of these stories already because I've read them as they come out. And together, it's going to be one amazing collection. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that one. And,
very cool. Yeah, you know, I have that Darker Shade of Magic here too. I've read V. Schwab's Vicious, and I really loved that book. I thought that was great. So I really want to get into those the alt magic history, London, and all that kind of good stuff. So
it was a really engaging read. My review is going up on my blog soon. I missed it when it first came out for some reason, and since it's come out, I've had a whole lot of people tell me it's really fantastic and I should pick it up. So I'm glad I finally did.
Cool. My pick this week is going to be some music. I've been very into soundtracks lately. And so the pick that I'm going to have is the score to The Martian, the recent movie that was just out, starring Matt Damon and based on the book by Andy Weir. And this soundtrack, the composer is Harry Gregson Williams, who happens to be one of my favorite composers. So I didn't really even notice it while I was watching the movie, which is often the case.
I don't remember music in that movie.
Yeah, there is. And you know what? I think, honestly, if you don't notice the music in a movie, that's probably a good sign because it just means you were in the movie and you weren't thinking about the music so much. It was helping steer it in the right direction. So one of the things I like about Harry Gregson Williams as a composer is that he does a wonderful job of linking sort of the orchestral with electronic music. So there is, in this, the electronic stuff is very subtle. It's more orchestra than it is electronic, but I should also kind of give a little additional pick to, there's a podcast called Song Exploder. If you have not heard that podcast before, it's usually only about 15 minutes long, and it's a songwriter or a composer basically breaking down one of their songs or one of their pieces, and it's really well done. And I heard him breaking down his score, and that's I should go check that out. So it's a very subtle. The electronics are supposed to represent sort of the science angle on things and all that. So there's like little synthy arpeggiated stuff along with this stuff. So if you like good soundtrack music, The Martian, Harry Gregson Williams, very good. It's on Apple Music streaming. I'm assuming it's streaming on Spotify too. So if you have any of those services, you can use that.
I bought it right after the film came out, and I've been listening to it ever since. And I have to say my favorite track is Emergency Launch, which is the second track on there, and it's very tense. It ramps right up and it goes gets pretty intense pretty quickly.
It's a great soundtrack, and I love him. I haven't, you know, he does a lot of work. I think once these composers get going, they just, you know, they just do two or three scores a year or however many, and you know, just keeps him pop up. So
he did a couple of other ones I've enjoyed from him is Gone Baby Gone and The Town. Those are really good. I find it when I'm writing, I just put those on in the background and they're fantastic. But along with The Martian, another one I would recommend if you haven't already is the soundtrack for Gravity, which complements this one pretty nicely. That is I remember they had released parts of it right before the movie came out, and I thought that if the movie is as intense as the soundtrack, it's going to be pretty incredible, and it really turned out to be. So
I also like the soundtrack for Interstellar.
I wasn't as thrilled with that one for some reason.
Reason I like it. It's very, like you said, it's a very intense soundtrack.
It's interesting. I can't really put my thumb on it why I didn't like it as much as the other two. And maybe that just has to do with how the sound for that film. I thought that it really it almost sort of infringed on the film at points, because, you know, you're watching the film as it goes along, and all of a sudden you hear the music blaring.
They used sound, all sound, in that movie really weird. So it's like, it gets really, really quiet when people are talking, and you're kind of leaning in going, what? And then all of a sudden they blare music at you. So I could see where that – I think if you listened to the soundtrack without actually having watched the movie, the soundtrack becomes better.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to give it another try.
Yeah.
But yeah, those three together are both, you know, three, and you have to sort of think of it. It's pretty incredible that we've had three really sort of hard sci-fi movies within the past couple of years, and together they all sort of complement one another pretty nicely.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon gets lost in two of them.
Yes, he does.
Sure. Cool, cool. Patrick, what's your pick this week,
though? My pick this week is something, and unfortunately, I know Andrew has no exposure on this whatsoever. He doesn't know anything about it. It's a TV show, a little known TV show. It launched recently on the channel formerly known as Science Sci-Fi. It's called The Expanse.
Haven't heard of it.
Yeah. as you know, John, I got huge into James S. A. Corey's books last year. It took me a while. I had the ebook, I had the paperback for a while of Leviathan Wakes, and every time I tried to get into it, it just didn't happen. And I always go back to John DiNardo, who talks about, you know, there is this experience to reading a book. And if you're having a shitty life at the time and things aren't going well, it's really difficult for you to get into a book. And he calls it the reading experience. And that's what was happening with me. Every time I tried to get into the book, it just wasn't working. And other things were kind of invading my brain. So last year, what happened was I got into Audible. And I started really enjoying audiobooks. And one of the first ones I got was Leviathan Wakes. And Jefferson Mays does such an amazing job with that book that I was immediately hooked. And I consumed all of the books on Audible and as quickly as I could. And I just loved them. And so the TV show for me is an extension of that. And we talked a little bit about it last week and the week before, but that's fine. But now it's my pick, so I get to talk about it. And it's as I said to you, you have to read at least the first two books to enjoy, I think, the TV show, because they've mixed some characters from book two into the show. But, you know, I saw the first episode online. It was funny because I watched it online and then YouTube pulled it down for a copyright violation against Lionsgate, which I thought was just hilarious because it was actually on the SIFI official YouTube channel. So it's you know, it's that whole stupid algorithm that they do. They're like, oh, no, wait, this is a copyright infringement. We got to take this down. It's our own content. and so I'm like telling people, oh, go watch it, go watch it. And they're like, the link doesn't work. And then they did the thing where they put, what was it, the next two episodes or three on demand and online and stuff. And you could watch them all. And I'm like, and so I just binge watched, you know, the first four episodes or something. And then the bad part about that was I was sitting around waiting for the next episode, which finally dropped a couple weeks ago. And it was just amazing. And I'm loving this show so hard. And I just want everybody to get into it. I've totally converted Sarah Chorn, and now she's watching the show. People just need to watch it. And I think I told you, I took two pictures with my phone and tweeted them out. The first one was Holden meeting the coffee machine on the Rocinante. It was love at first sight, and it was just such a perfect scene. And then the second one was when they actually do change the transponder name from the Tachi to the Rocinante. Those are the two moments that, for me, just really, really made it, and I was so excited and happy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. My plan, because I'm a cord cutter and I don't get, so, and I know it's online, but I watch stuff on TV. Like, I have a TV, so if I need to be on one of the streaming channels, but I do buy stuff, so I'll probably just wait until the
whole season. Have you considered Chromecast?
Yeah, but you know why I don't use Chromecast is I with the Roku player.
Oh, you get the headphones, and you can.
It has the headphones. Gotcha. Yeah. So with a Chromecast, I wouldn't be able to do that, gotcha. And that's the only way I can watch stuff. So but I'm looking for. I'll just buy it on Google Play or whatever, and just, you know, watch it.
We could get you a 12-foot long cord for your headphones, and you could plug that into the TV, and then have that headphones in your bed still.
Yeah, that doesn't really work. Well, anyway, that's cool. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to watching that as well when it gets around to it. So Andrew does lots of different stuff online, and you know, and I don't know how personal you want to get, Andrew, but I noticed, you know, you worked, and if we can edit this out if you don't want to talk about this, but you worked at a university for quite a few years, and you're not doing that now, and you're choosing to work. So maybe you could tell us about sort of career choices that you've recently made and what you're doing now.
Sure. I'll actually tie this back to The Expanse, because that actually plays into it a little bit. I don't want to say that, you know, I left my job because of The Expanse, but it figures in somehow. So I worked at Norwich University's College of Graduate and Continuing Studies for, I want to say, 8 years. I worked there as their student services advisor for the MBA MSISA programs, which is information security and MBA programs. And along the way, I've been doing a lot of writing in sort of geek genre spheres. And over the past year, I started picking up some more gigs that let me do some more interesting things. I started working for Barnes & Noble's sci-fi blog as a contributor. And one of the first things that I did there is I pitched them an article that I wanted to really go into the background of The Expanse, which is I had been reading it for years. I had read the book before it had come out, and I had been a big fan of it since then, and it's grown on me since then. And I interviewed the authors a couple times and knew that there was some interesting stories behind it, because it was it didn't quite have the traditional, you know, author sits in a room, writes the novel, right, publishes it.
The whole role-playing game
Yes. And then so what happened is I had pitched the article. They liked, Barnes & Noble liked the idea. And then I had emailed James S.A. Corey and the two of them and said, hey, you know, I'm writing this thing. I'd like to interview you. And I was able to get on the set to go visit them while they were filming. So that was pretty cool. That was the first time I've ever been to a film set before. And it was pretty impressive. They had put together a massive amount of equipment and sets for this. And I got to see some scenes that are coming up in the show. And then got to talk with the writers. Interestingly, one of the writers is actually from Vermont, so I've been able to see him since then a little bit. So basically, I put together a really long article called Evolution of a Space Epic, which hit on Barnes & Noble earlier this year. I think early May or late May it came out. And that was sort of when I sort of realized that, you know, this is what I really would like to do, is I like to do these longer form genre stories rather than just sort of reading a book and then talking about why I liked it. I've been getting more and more interested in, you know, how does the business of science fiction fantasy work, and how does like an individual author's life and you know, whatever they're doing impact their writing. And what is it that publishers are doing and readers are doing that is impacting the writing? So this is a really good example of that. I've also been spreading into doing some stuff with the Kirkus Review column I write, and a couple of other places, and just sort of looking into some of the behind-the-scenes things. I've also done the same thing for IO9. I did a couple of really detailed articles on Ceres and Pluto. And got to write about, you know, how are they discovered and how their discoveries impact how we saw the solar system. So over the course of the year, after doing stuff like this, it started to realize that, you know, hey, I can, I'd like to do this more often. And it was sort of coming up to the point where I didn't have enough time to do that and do my day job at the same time. I can do one or the other. Fortunately, I'm also working for IO9 and Gizmodo as their weekend editor, and that has allowed me to basically leave my day job in order to focus on some of the longer form writing that I've been wanting to do. So it's been a fun transition so far. I'm hoping it will work out, and I've got a lot of projects up in the air and a lot of things that I'm that are sort of brewing, but hopefully we'll have them come together soon.
And you know, because I noticed that you'd how long have you been doing the weekend editor thing at IO9 for now?
I've been doing that since May, June of last year. So that was basically something I've been wanting to do for a while, and the opportunity came up, so I just sort of jumped on it.
Yeah, because I have all my my Feedly, all my blogs and stuff that comes up, and I just started noticing your name on like every post on IO9 on the weekend, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, okay, so what's going on there? So and one of the reasons I asked you on the show today is. My my wife and I, what we often do, or, you know, on a Friday night, we'll sit and like watch YouTube and watch all old 80s videos. And I remember it was over the summer. We were binging on Rick Springfield videos like you do, you know, and he has a song called The Human Touch. And the video is horrible. It's great though, but it's like a post-apocalyptic future video. And then there's like a minute of acting, and there's like a minute of a story before like the song even starts. Like, you know, as is, you know, what would typically be in a 1986 video. Mm-hmm. And the computer's like, you know, Rick Springfield asked the computer, "What year is it?" And it's like, "It's 2016." And I'm like, "Oh, that's got to become a thing on the internet, in a couple months." And so I just thought about it again. I think it was on New Year's Eve. I'm like, I remember that Rick Springfield video. And I'm like, you know, I should tell Andrew to run this on IO9 because I bet this would be something that people. And it's what's really funny about that kind of stuff on a site like IO9 is then what some of the conversation turns into in the comments of that. And there was some really funny stuff coming up because it's what I like about genre overall, at least to some of the sites that I read, is that because I know in nerd culture it can just be flaming out in the comments. It can be terrible. But I feel like in that – now, do you moderate the comments on that stuff, Andrew? Yeah. So I guess I'm not seeing the bad stuff that can happen with all that, you know.
There's stuff that we'll pull out. When, like, for example, the George R. R. Martin thing that came out when last week when he said that he didn't have the book finished up. We had to basically keep an eye on the comments there and just sort of take out some of the stuff that was really egregious. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of spam that pops up that we take care of, things like mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. and just sort of, you know, push it along as best we can.
Yeah, one of my favorite comments, someone put a picture of a Rick Springfield album where he is like in a chauffeur outfit and he's in the backseat of a limousine and there's like dogs dressed up like humans in the back. And it's like, well, at least it's not the future where dogs are controlling us. I don't know. It was very clever. There's some good comments in there.
What are your responsibilities as the weekend editor at IO9?
So my job is basically it's actually IO9 and Gizmodo. Those two sites have merged. And my role is to basically create content for the site, cover news as it comes out. I've been developing some features. Last fall, I did basically cover the Stormtrooper build that I did. I've run a couple of other random things that I've been sort of testing out, trying to do a lot of interviews, book reviews, things like that. And basically just to keep people who come to the site engaged and interested and coming back time and time again. Because before I took this gig, I'd come to the website and I'd start a check and like, oh, you know, no, nothing, there's nothing new, but there's always something going on the internet. So it's basically just trying to find stuff as it's happening, finding stuff that's fun and interesting and exciting and that people will sort of go back to. So that's basically in a nutshell.
Typically, how many posts are put out during the weekend?
It really depends, and I don't write all of them. I will take stuff in from sister sites, and we'll splice them back and forth. And that's basically you know, stuff that's of interest to the IO9 reader, people who go to IO9 exclusively. So I'll share stuff over to other sites as well. I'll hand it over to their weekend editors, and so because especially with The Force Awakens, when that came out, we shared some stuff back and forth quite a bit. So yeah, it really depends weekend to weekend. Sometimes there's not a whole lot going on, and we'll have a little bit less. But sometimes I'll be like just, you know, writing from 9 to 9. It seems like that, at least that's what it seems like.
Cool. And so now you're is your goal to sort of get to the point where you're full time doing a lot of freelance work? Is that kind of the goal now, or are there bigger plans?
That's what I'm doing now, actually.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of freelance work. I write for IO9, Gizmodo, Kirkus Reviews, Barnes & Noble. I also have a couple of enterprise projects that I'm working on. I'm teaching for Norwich. So there's enough to keep me busy, and it's enough to keep me, the bills paid, so which is nice. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now that I have more time to devote to this and I can research stuff more, I can actually go ahead and say yes to some things that I've been wanting to do.
Mm. Now, and how about fiction? Because I know you've written some fiction too. So where are you at in your fiction writing?
Oh yeah, so it all sort of falls in the same pot. and now that I have more time to actually get to stuff, I'll be able to get to
it. Well, that's the theory.
The thing is, Well, the thing is up until this point is that the nonfiction stuff pays, and stuff is more of a, you know, it's more of a crapshoot. You know, I can write up something and be really happy with it, but I don't have a guaranteed sale for it. Whereas if I write a book review, I can probably find some place to go. If I can write a history article or some sort of feature that involves science fiction fantasy, I have a guaranteed home for that between all the different places I write. So it mostly just comes down to time and, you know, what time did I have available before. With the day job and sort of grabbing writing time where I could, the choice is pretty easy. I'm not going to write fiction because, you know, there's no way I can either sell it or anything else. Whereas now with more free time, I'm actually carving out more time to do that sort of thing.
Now, maybe you can answer this question. If someone wanted to break into writing nonfiction pieces for these various kinds of sites that you write for, do you have any advice for how one would go about doing that?
I've had a couple of people ask me that before recently, and basically what I started, the only thing I can go back to is my own experience, and I started with my own blog, and it's andrewliptek.com. It was a couple of names before, but what I did with that is I basically started doing book reviews and I started building up a little bit of a track record, and that gave me a foot in the door with SF Signal. I emailed John at some point, said, "Hey, I'd like to write for you. And, you know, how do I go about, you know, writing reviews or whatever?" And he basically said, "Yeah, just come on over and do it."
Bring and then bagels.
After that, this was before bagels. Then, you know, there's other places where I think Barnes & Noble, I applied to an ad. Other places I've emailed them and asked, like, "Hey, I'd like to write for you. How do you do this?" So part of it's having a good track record that you can go back to. Part of it's seeking out opportunities like that and really pursuing stuff. And sometimes it's just going up into them and asking, "Hey, you know, I'd like to write for you. How do I do that?" Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you at least get an answer.
Mm. Cool. All right. Well, you know, before we wrap it up today, so I should say that if you want to find Andrew's work, you can follow him on Twitter at andrewliptek.com. Also, throw out your website again, Andrew.
My website is andrewliptek.com.
Cool. And then, so I'm sure you can get links to his various articles, but once again, he is the weekend editor over at IO9.
And Gawker.
He's got articles on and Gawker, yeah. He's omnipresent at this point. Anything else you want to let our listeners know before we wrap it up today, Andrew?
Not really. I mean, I've got a whole bunch of articles in the works that I'm excited that will hopefully be coming out in the next couple of months, and some other things that are sort of in the works that hopefully will reach some fruition, and hopefully they'll go beyond me saying that. So we'll see.
Very good. And before we do wrap it up today, I do want to let people know, if you like the show, if you like what Patrick and I do, if you get value, if you get entertainment out of the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have 37 patrons right now that back the show, and we are so appreciative of them for really just helping us do this every month. You know, I always joke around. I'm like, we're not the best podcast, but we are the most consistent. I don't know if that's even true anymore in terms of the most, but we do put out a show pretty much every week, and we've done it for how many years now, Patrick?
Six years?
Yeah. Five, six, 30, a long time. We're in the 200. I don't know. I've known you my whole life. If you like the show, if you like hearing from people like Andrew and other authors, and we've had a lot of artists on recently, you know, consider becoming one of our patrons. It really means a lot to us, and it really helps a lot too. So just go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you'd like to let people know?
What I've been talking about the last 3 weeks, I launched a new ebook. It's called Cahill's Unfinished Business. It's available on Nook and Kindle. If you buy it, I would appreciate it. And if you like it, write a review.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?